E1. Number 34A.
Yes. You see, today in logic, they have coined a logic language. It's called the language L, logic language L. And with that language L, which just deals with single letters, with funny symbols that imply the most important relationships, for instance, that something is equal to something, an equal sign is unequal, that something, if you have something that it implies something else, the implication is just another symbol, or that if something is true, the opposite must be untrue, that's just a symbol put there, so that you can reduce practically all reasoning, which we do on a few symbols, and if one understands those symbols and calculates with these symbols, one can state a subject on just a few pages or even on with a few lines. I have seen a student of logic who is familiar with the language L stating, for instance, to me, all the 16 laws of the prophets just on one page. I couldn't naturally read it until I began to understand something about the language L, but you can state all the ramifications of, say, the prophets, which I have put out in 16 laws, each differently stated and in different relationship. And that student just could, through that logic language, just write it down on a single page. It needs very little. You see, symbols are terrific. If we know what the symbols mean, we can use them, and then they are usually much more exact than sentence language. And little by little, sentence language, I think, will go out of being a method of education. And as far as I know, I think you have over here in America too, that tendency in the schools to introduce much more diagrams, tabulations, charts, and so on, through which one teaches. If I look back to my school years, or you look back to your school years, I don't think that you were being taught through charts and tabulations and so on, because that was just at that time not the language which they would understand. So today we begin to use other communication means than just long sentences, and one of the best way and shortest way to indicate really relationships are, as we have it here on the chart, or as we will have it next year with the matrix, we can communicate informations in such a great measure just by the way how we arrange our symbols. We have on this chart only really 15 terms. We have not a single sentence on that chart. We don't use any more that cumbersome symbol language of sentences, just terms. But the arrangement of those terms, the way they are categorized through the introduction of horizontal and vertical lines. You see, these lines, they have a great communication value, those lines. They show exactly that here are different relationships which have to be seen, and which have to be seen in the right perspective, so that we have here a representation of the whole of being without a sentence, without even introducing the term idea, because that is implied through the symbol of Absolute Christian Science. By definition, we know that Absolute Christian Science means that the principle has an idea. Or without mentioning the term God, without mentioning the term man, which usually is the most important subject in the human mind, without introducing mortal mind, matter, sense testimony, all these negatives, we don't even have to introduce them because they are implied in the chart. The moment I have mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love in the relationship of Christian Science, and because I know the symbol of Christian Science, that it is a shorthand symbol or a super symbol for meaning here, the relationship between truth and error is stated, you see? I not even have to say what is the opposite of mind, because it's implied there. I don't have to say and state out and spell out what is the opposite of spirit, because it's implied in spirit, matter. So that all that, can you say, a cumbersome heap of words, you see, just becomes irrelevant to the presentation and teaching through that new symbol language. Yeah. Within that chart, we see that the most important thing, therefore, is, in order to understand that symbol language, to understand categories. And so we give here the true categories, and these categories are just shown through the simple symbol of straight lines, horizontally, vertically, showing that there is something in the human mind which is able, and the academic field that investigates human cognition, human perception, just stands before a enigma, why it is that the human mind is able to categorize things. Because this is taken for granted that we can. Why are we able to categorize according to a certain category which is not visible? How can you categorize, say, I don't take an example because it goes too far, but how on earth can we categorize and say that, say, this tree and that tree and the other tree are all tree, are all trees, the category of trees? This is something we take for granted as obvious, but it isn't. It isn't. I don't go into it. It becomes too complicated and too big. I just want to state this, you see, that we have this infinite phenomena in being, and yet there is something within us that can easily put these infinite phenomena in being in just a few classifications and see that all that is within that through within one classification has one common denominator. And this is a marvel in itself. And Mrs. Eddy was the first one really who could do that with divine facts. Up to that point, the human mind was only able to do it with objects. They could put all the trees into one classification and all the insects in classification and then afterwards in subclassification and so on. See, if you give, say, to a child a heap of stones, and these stones are either triangle or round or square, say these three forms, and if within the triangles we have perhaps stones that have a different color, and that if you have within the different color of the equal form, perhaps different bigness, big triangles, small triangles, And perhaps another category, like being thin or thick, you can have various aspects, and you have all that on a heap, and you say to a child, go and put some order into it. Then it may pick up and say, I'm going to choose one order. Say I take out all those that are red and put them into red. But another one could take them and say, no, I put them into the order, all triangles to get on a heap and all squares on a heap and all rounds on a heap. Or another one could say, no, I put all that which are big on a heap and those that are small on a heap. Or another one could say, I classify it differently. I put all that they are thick on a heap and those that are thin on a heap. And when you have started in one category, you can afterwards follow up those categories so that finally you have sorted out everything. See, but this is of the ability to be able to take a whole heap and classify them, subclassify them, and therefore bring complete order into something. Now, Mrs. Eddy was the first one who was able to take divine concepts and categorize them. Up to that point, all the philosophers have tried to classify material objects or humanly conceptual concepts into categories. And that's the great question of the fundamental categories, like Kant had them, like Aristoteles had them, like practically every great philosopher tried to categorize it differently, but it never was really satisfying. And so Mrs. Eddy had that divine consciousness which could jump on the best categorization possible, namely the divine categorization. Once taken the divine categorization, as you have seen, like the synonymous terms, then she could go further and subclassify them, as we have been doing this week. We have tried to do that. We have just taken those three great classifications, first the levels, second the four sides of the city, and third the synonymous terms, and with that, those few symbols, we began to construct the structure of being. Classification upon classification, classification within classification, until finally all human qualities and even all counterfeits like fear and hate and jealousy, like the mortal sense, mortal testimony and everything found within our model a place value. Do you see the bigness of what Mrs. Eddy has introduced? And therefore, the bigness of what we can see without learning a lot, without memorizing anything, just with those few 15 root symbols and understanding the processing of them, the calculus of them, and then everything can fall into place. Now, another point which I want to bring out about this chart is that really to present something in such a way, and especially in a structured way, is really the most modern approach to any subject. In every subject today, be it economy, be it bookkeeping, be it organization, management, everywhere where you are, everywhere they begin to use, instead of sentences, charts, especially matrices, as the best way of getting an insight into the subject from a completely comprehensive point of view. So if we use this method, we can be quite sure that we are up to date and that we are not just trying to find a method which is out of the way. You say out of the way, outwayish, huh? Yeah. What we see here also is that the chart represents that great law of transformation, which Piaget asks. The chart shows how from the one principle on the level of science itself, how from the infinite one, so to say at the top of the pyramid, that cornerstone there on the top of the pyramid is translating itself to an ever broader and broader basis, and therefore taking on new form. We have seen that when we stay with the level of science itself and with that law of isness, where being is its own infinite being, that this begins to translate itself to the level of divine science as the operative law of being. And it takes on the operative sense. Then we have seen how it translates itself further down to absolute Christian science as that sense which can bring out individual ideas within the infinite. Infinite ideas. And then we have seen how on the level of Christian science, these ideas are operating in order to offset its counterfeit and also in order to improve the human state of things. That's why we always had a human category on the level of Christian science. There is therefore a great transformation taking place, but what we have to see is that within that transformation, the synonymous term is not transformed into something else. It has its identity and upholds its identity, though the outward manifestation is transformed. This identity is usually called the isomorphy of being. Isomorphy means iso, equal, morphy, form, equal form. So that we can see that, for instance, mind always is mind, no matter on which level mind appears. The appearance is always different. That's true. But mind never loses its identity to be mind, for instance, if we take mind. Let's see, for instance, how mind transforms itself. We have the translation as it goes to other levels. It undergoes the law of transforming without losing its identity to be mind. See, that's the big point you have to keep in mind, that mind remains mind no matter on which level it appears. The appearance changes, but mind does not change. So on the level of science itself, for instance, we had that mind is its own infinite intelligence. You remember? That mind is its own infinite mind, therefore that it's its own infinite intelligence. But when we were considering it on the level of divine science, we could see that mind takes on the operative sense of being, not the isness sense of being as intelligence. And so mind, still being mind, still being what mind is, but bringing out a completely different aspect, becomes now manifestation. We said, for instance, that mind manifests itself out of itself. So we felt there that mind is really bringing out the operative sense of mind as manifestation. When we were on the level of absolute Christian Science, we could see there that what life, truth and love does is to bring out from the well of mind the ideas of mind, because we could see absolute Christian Science states relationship between principle and ideas, therefore would show here that mind brings out through manifestation ideas of mind, all the ideas of mind. So suddenly we see that idea, as Mrs. Eddy or as Webster really defines it, is an image in mind. And so we have the whole imagery of the divine mind in absolute Christian Science. The image of mind, the ideas of mind. When we come to Christian Science, then mind is enlarged even further. We saw, for instance, if you now remember your diagrams, we remember that now mind in the world takes a form when it touches the human of wisdom or of seeking, of enlightenment, or of turning to the light. See, suddenly mind is seeking, is desire. Or if we take what it appeared in the Christ, there we saw that mind is the corrective, corrects error, corrects. You had a corrective sense of mind. Or in Christianity, you remember that it said that when mind touches the human, that we see the measure of big-mindedness, open-mindedness. In the category of science itself, mind had again a different aspect. It was showing that each idea is perfect. And so, wherever you touch mind, intrinsically, it's the whole of mind. But according to the accentuation given by the categories, mind appears as something completely different, yet remaining mind. That's the isomorphy of mind. Can you see now that when we keep the whole chart in consciousness, therefore, go out from the comprehensive view, no more just from the structural, analytical point of view, but from the comprehensive view. Therefore, the moment, say, we would now start again and go through the law of science itself and see that mind is its own infinite mind, then we would suddenly feel that mind is much bigger than just saying mind is its own infinite intelligence. Because, as I have shown you now, mind never loses its identity, though it is transformed to all sorts of categories and levels. Therefore, the moment I say mind is its own infinite mind, I take all categories at once. I can no more separate them as we did in order to get a good analysis, and I feel that the tone of mind is its own infinite mind is so much bigger, because that law will include within itself all the other levels, therefore will include within itself all that what we have said, that mind manifests itself, that mind manifests itself as ideas, as seeking, as desire, as enlightenment, as vision, that mind manifests itself as the corrective, as the leading and the guiding in Christ, that mind manifests itself as the realm of ideas, the realm of big-mindedness, of open-mindedness. Can you see, you touch then the whole tone of mind. So, in the first few days of this week, we have done the analysis of the chart. Once we have done that analysis and consider it, somehow we cannot prevent that our consciousness becomes comprehensive. That is, that we make the synthesis of the whole chart. And therefore feel that if I see that mind is its own infinite mind, that asks to include the level of divine science, namely that mind is its own infinite manifestation of mind, that it includes the level of absolute Christian science and Christian science, which means that mind being its own infinite mind is the infinite manifestation of the ideas of mind. The infinite manifestation of the ideas of mind include Christian science, namely that mind being its own infinite manifestation of all the ideas of mind is that which brings open-mindedness, the desire, the motive to seek God, the seeking, the searching, the enlightenment, the apprehension, the comprehension of being, the all-knowing, the all-hearing mind, and you get everything into it. Because in the comprehensive sense, we cannot stay in one box and have it closed up definitely and firmly and don't see the relationship with all the other compartments of the chart. So let's see, you see, that within our consciousness, we do not make these watertight compartments of categories. We do only make them for the sake of clarification and analysis. But afterwards, the comprehensive sense will just melt them together again into one mind.